We've talked the last couple of days about the shift in the direction that healthcare is going, with much more attention being given to health promotion and prevention, because of the fact that lifestyle diseases of today, like cancer and heart disease, are diseases that call for much more individual responsibility on the part of people for self-care, rather than to rely on the world of medicine in order to fix it. And we focused yesterday on the spiritual dimension of health, and we're going to continue with that today by focusing particularly on the faith factor in health and healing. That's our topic for today. Before we move into that, let me just ask for those of you who were here yesterday, we stopped with the guided imagery exercise on discerning spiritual needs. Didn't have a chance really to have any time to process that. Is there anybody who has any comment or reaction to that before we move into our topic for today? I wanted to allow for that, if there was any kind of reaction on the part of people. Okay, we'll be doing more of that later this week. The idea of a connection between faith and healing is not exactly a new idea. It's been around as long as people have reflected on illness and how illness can be alleviated, and has a much, much longer history, a concern about spiritual healing than physical healing, even though in the 20th century what dominates our attention is physical healing and what can be accomplished through medicine. So we're talking about a very ancient idea when we talk about the relationship of faith and healing. And I want to start with that before I get into some of the stuff that I've done in a more contemporary frame of reference. Look, first of all, just for a few moments as background on the link between faith and healing in the ministry of Jesus. A very cursory reading of the Gospels makes you aware that healing was very important in the ministry of Jesus. One-third of all of the passages in the Gospels are on healings of Jesus. And they're not just healings of the soul, they're physical healings. The church has tended to spiritualize some of those stories, and to take stories about the healing of blindness and talk about gaining greater insight into our lives and so forth. But Jesus' ministry was very much a whole person ministry, and the physical healing was very much a part of it. Well, now you're familiar enough with those stories. Let me just ask you, draw you out a little bit, what kind of connection between faith and healing do you see in the ministry of Jesus? Yeah.
I notice a lot of times he would say, your sins are forgiven, and probably lifting that burden of guilt from someone.
Okay. Clearly the forgiveness of sins is a part of the healing that Jesus does. See any connection between the forgiveness that Jesus does in his healing and the physical healing that he does? Can you think of a story which makes those connections? Anybody?
The paralytic that was lowered through the roof.
Yeah.
Do you want to
It's a fascinating story. You're all familiar with that. These four men bring the paralytic and drop him down to Jesus. And it's very obvious to everybody why they brought him. Jesus is the healer. And so the first thing that Jesus says to him is, my child, your sins are forgiven. And then the religious establishment gets into a big argument with him, because only God has authority to forgive sins. Who is he to forgive sins? And so Jesus engages in an argument with them, and then he turns away from them and says, to show you that I have the authority to forgive sins, turns to the paralytic and says, take up your mat and walk. Isn't that interesting? You know, you expect Jesus to heal, he forgives. And then when you expect him to forgive, he heals. It's all of a piece. I think that's what that means to me. It's different aspects of a larger reality, a very unitary notion that's there. But forgiveness and healing are very much part of one piece in the ministry of Jesus. One other thing about that story, on the relationship of faith and healing, that story says that when they dropped the paralytic down, it says Jesus saw their faith. Not the faith of the man who was paralyzed, but the faith of the people who brought him, the community. In other words, what's going on within the community that brings the sick man is the faith that Jesus pays attention to in that story. Well, what other kind of connection between faith and healing do you see in the stories of Jesus?
There must be quite a connection between thankfulness and faith, because in the 10 lepers in the return, all he did was thank him, and then he says, your faith has made you whole. You
know? Yeah.
There are different ways of speaking of the same thing.
Yeah, and in that story, it's so clear that the faith comes after rather than before. It's, and the faith is an expression of gratitude and a link to Jesus that wasn't there before. Any other connections?
The centurion who believed.
Yes.
He said he had authority, but his servants did whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
Jesus had a lot of faith. And him to just bring him. Was it the child who had died or was ill or something?
Yeah, it was. And Jesus heals in that particular instance without the person even being there on the faith of the centurion. Again, the faith of the other is the key factor.
I find it interesting that this was passed on to man, like when Peter was at the temple and he healed the man, and he was jumping and running and having a great time in the temple.
Yeah. It's very clear in the Acts of the Apostles, which tells the story of the early Christians, that healing continues to be a very basic ministry of the church. You find that in the church fathers. In fact, there's a very rich tradition of healing throughout the whole Christian story. It's a very checkered story in terms of what happened to that tradition, and I don't want to get into that now, but it's always been a part of the tradition of the church. And in some cases, of course, it's a direct correlation, almost cause and effect, it seems, where the woman who touches the garment, who has the hemorrhaging, and Jesus says, your faith has made you whole. The Greek word is sozo, which is sometimes translated save and sometimes translated made well, made whole. In this case, obviously, made well physically. Greek has one word, we have two, because we make sharp distinctions between the two that the New Testament doesn't. And for the Greek, there's just one word to talk about that. Carl?
The other one that is a little astonishing, and he says, I haven't found this kind of faith in all of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Which must have really been a slap in the face of these people around who are the Israelites and the non-Israelites.
Yes, indeed. And of course, in a lot of the stories, faith isn't mentioned at all. So it would be very much a mistake to draw some kind of dogmatic formula out of this on the relationship of faith and health, because you see a whole variety of ways in which there are connections. What you can say clearly is that faith is a factor in healing on the basis of the stories of the New Testament. And you can say that, I think, about healing as it's occurred throughout the world, that it's been a factor. Well, let me turn this more to contemporary experience, some of your own experience. Any stories that you can tell out of your own life or somebody you know where you saw a link between faith and healing?
I might mention that was a brother-in-law of a good friend of mine. He had an incurable brain tumor and surgery, and we were asked to pray for him, all the relatives, and prayed. And this man, the last I heard, just a few, all this took place maybe 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the last I heard was a few years ago. He's leading a very productive life. Every time he goes to the doctor, he goes once a year for a checkup, and the doctor said, "You're supposed to be dead."
Mm-hmm.
But there was a large number of people who have prayed in this. And he's very strong faith.
Okay. Any other stories? Yes.
My husband was diagnosed to die in 6 months before surgery. I was very upset. I wasn't sleeping. I was having a really hard time. One of the jobs from the church for me was to take some money to a colored woman whose husband had died of heart surgery. And I had always been bothered by people talking about the Golden Gates, the pearly things, all this, you know. And I went up and knocked on the door. She had a bedfast mother in her 80s that she was taking care of. I gave her the money. And she gave me her faith. It was a miracle, really, for me, because I was able to use that then through the years of his illness.
Yeah, I appreciate your sharing that. And I'm sure all of us have stories like that. Of being enriched and strengthened in our own faith by contact with people. We'll be talking more about that tomorrow. We're going to talk about chronic illness and spirituality in relation to people who are chronically ill. Any other stories that anybody wants to share? Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, as a nurse, it's always been easier to work with people when you know they have faith, and you know, and remind them of it. To see they get through surgery so much better, and whatever they're facing, even if they're facing death, they just seem to have a stamina, something that carries them through.
Yeah, in other words, it's just a almost kind of natural resource that's there for them. That facilitates the healing and enables them to cope better. I think that for a lot of people, when you talk about the link between faith and healing, you immediately, your thoughts go, or at least mine do, to faith healers. Oral Roberts, some of the other televangelists, people who used to come with the tent ministry, and you go and you're miraculously healed by the person who is the faith healer. And we don't get beyond that to the wide diversity of ways in which faith can be linked to healing. Dave?
We were debating whether to tell you this, but we'll tell it to you because it points up how in the African setting they look at this a little differently. This lady came to us. She had been having trouble for years, hemorrhaging. And she'd been to various doctors, and she came and wanted to be prayed for. And so we were home, and the two of us, as she knelt, put her hands on her head and read some scripture and prayed to her. Then about, prayed for her. But then about a year later, when she was talking to Elaine in the garden one day, she says, you know, that day you prayed for me back there, I was healed then. I've never had that problem since. But a whole year passed, she hadn't blown any trumpets, it hadn't been in the paper, because that's part of the environment from which she came, that you would expect something like that.
Yeah, I appreciate your sharing that, because it gets into what I want to be talking about in terms of the expectant trust that people have, which I know in that culture is very strong, around people who are perceived as healers and who have the power to heal. Yeah, in the back.
Yeah, I was going to share, I was diagnosed with rectal cancer on the day I went in for an exam, and our doctor took Marty and I, Marty Dana Pastor, took us into his office and prayed with us right there. Did not expect Marty to pray, but he prayed for us. And he got us through the surgery. He prayed before surgery for himself and for the will of God. And then after that, watched me continually. And a year later, I needed another surgery, liver surgery, which he wasn't even sure was necessary or could be done. But he says, I'm going to send you to the specialist. And I said, well, I want to go to a Christian surgeon if possible. He said, well, one I know isn't, and the other one I know is. And I said, well, good, where is the one that is? And it would happen to be the closest one to our house. And they did all the tests necessary and found out that indeed I could have the liver surgery. And that doctor, even though his faith was strong, he did not feel comfortable praying. So he had Marty pray for him before the surgery. And I really feel that there is a connection. And yet, I'm not saying that it's because of these things that I'm still here. I'm thankful that I am. I feel sorry for the people that I have met since then that have not been healed, and yet they have the greater healing now in heaven.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And isn't it enough, and that's part of what I want to be saying today, to say that faith is a factor? Do we have to say that it's the whole thing? It's one dimension of what is happening. And I personally don't have much patience with people who want to shut out all of the resources that are available. People who say, well, I'll depend upon my faith, but I don't want the medical treatment. That's the mistake of Christian Science, I think. Though there are some remarkable stories of healing in Christian Science, which I do not deny, and would want to explain away, that exclusive reliance on one way in which healing happens seems to me to be very narrow and misses the boat.
I was just going to say, we never hear about the many that didn't take in Christian Science.
Oh, yeah, right. We often don't hear about those in the medical world as well. Yes.
I had a brother who died of cancer, and though we prayed that he would be physically healed, he never was. But he was spiritually healed. And I'll never forget the beautiful deathbed scene where he raised himself up just before he died and held his hand up and said, I see Jesus. He was completely healed so far as his spirit was concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think there's another dimension.
Oh, yeah, and we have to keep both those dimensions, I think, clearly in mind. And say that even if the physical healing does not happen, and there comes a point where it won't happen, you know, the statistics are still one death per person, and that's not likely to change in our lifetime. But so that the spiritual healing is primary and fundamental. What I'm concerned about today and want to focus our attention are the links between the levels, and explore with you more about what the interconnections are between the two. A couple more comments. Yes?
I'm not sure that I'm hearing everything you said, but I hear reference to health. And this has to, my own experience has to do with mental health. And today, when we have so many people, so many, many people walking the earth and sleeping, you know, that need help, maybe have been under care but dismissed. I had the privilege of helping a young man get his medicines that would have caused him terrific disaster for 2 days. We were both sitting waiting for our prescriptions to be filled. And he had a newspaper. Anyway, we conversed. And he said that he had been on mental medications ever since a child. And how terrible it was when he couldn't get, when he didn't have these. And he ran out of money. And he wasn't going to have any for 2 days. And so anyway, and I said, well, I'll help you today, you know. And he says, well, then I'll meet you on the second of the month to repay you. Well, at the pharmacy, which was connected with a co-op store, she just very, very much almost wouldn't give him the medicine, in, you know, in spite of my paying for it and wanting to, but she did. And I said, we're meeting, you know, again in a couple of days. Well, he was there. And I just think, you know, the many unseen people that we have that
yes.
are in such terrific, terrific distress in today's world.
Yes.
Probably all of heaven.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's.
We saw each other quite often after that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I noticed, he always spent a quarter for a newspaper. Which he probably couldn't afford, but probably was necessary for his dignity.
Yes.
And for me, I read the newspapers that people left on the streets.
Before you could pay for his medication.
Right, I could do that, yeah. Well, what I want to do now is, yes, one more.
I think the near-death experiences are interesting in that apparently people either see or hear something, as the lady mentioned a while ago, see or hear something or are enveloped by this piece before they die, but the near-death experience, they see a tunnel and it sounds
yes.
the same in the accounts that you read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to be talking about some of those experiences on Saturday. I'll be doing a session on healthy dying, and want to talk a little bit more about that at that time. I want to share with you a little bit about some work that I did on my last sabbatical leave at Stanford University on how faith relates to healing. What got me hooked onto this was reading a very small little book by Herbert Benson on Beyond the Relaxation Response. The book on the relaxation response, which is over in the bookstore, has sold many of those have been sold, and his method of helping people to relax is used in the medical world now regularly for stress-related diseases as a facilitation in healing. And the relaxation response, as Benson talked about it, it's a very simple procedure, and probably many of you have used it. You choose a comfortable position, close your eyes, relax your muscles, become aware of your breathing, maintain a passive attitude, and then repeat a neutral word or sound. It can be any word or any sound. And if you do that for 15 minutes, normally recommended a couple times a day, you will be amazed at how relaxed you become. And you don't fully know how much stress you have going on until you engage in that kind of relaxation. Well, that's become a very powerful tool and used regularly. But in beyond the relaxation response, what Benson says is this.
Down.
It's the same method, except for the last line. Repeat a brief phrase or word that reflects your belief system. In the ancient tradition of mysticism, this is often called a breath prayer. Jesus, peace of my soul. Or any phrase or word that for you would capture something that is of the essence of your faith. And the healing power of faith, Benson says, is enhanced by the relaxation response. And I was intrigued by this because for a respected physician to say that the real healing power is with the faith, and that's enhanced by the relaxation response, but the power is in the faith, I found very striking. And he talked about that as the faith factor in healing. And that's where I got the title of my book on the faith factor in healing. And what got me hooked into saying, well, what I'd like to do is to see, look for faith in the area where you'd least expect to find it. And that's in medical treatment. Because of the fact that medicine is a scientific treatment of illness, every effort is made to eliminate faith, because it's a subjective factor. And science works in terms of objective factors that you can measure and then have empirical evidence of the kind of difference that it makes. I started with the definition of faith that comes from Luther, and I think most of you are familiar with. Let me get it right here. One time I memorized it. It's nice to know there are some things you learned in confirmation which are still useful. Luther says this in his explanation to the first commandment. A God is that to which we look for all good and in which we find refuge in every time of need. To have a God is nothing else than to trust and believe him with our whole heart. As I have often said, the trust and faith of the heart alone make both God and an idol. For these two belong together, faith and God. That to which your heart clings and entrusts itself is, I say, really your God. So, faith is expectant trust, the kind of expectant trust that you have in time of need, whatever your heart grasps onto for rescue. For remedy and for healing. And so that's the understanding of faith that I was operating with. Faith is expectant trust. And obviously that's not just true for religious people. That's true for everybody. And so it's a generic, universal understanding of faith. Faith makes both God and idol, as Luther put it. But the assumption here, then, is that faith is active in healing wherever healing occurs. That the expectant trust that is present will be operative. So I explored three different areas in medicine where it seemed to me faith was a factor in healing. And I'm not sure we'll get to all of them today, but I want to start with the placebo effect, which is the most obvious place where faith as expectant trust is a factor in healing. Then the next area that I explored was on the story of illness. And what I mean is getting beyond simply the case history that any good physician does and ask, well, what's the larger story? What's the larger framework of meaning within which this illness is understood and which enables people to cope with it? And that's, I think, where faith is a factor in healing, in the larger story of the illness. And where you get big differences between individuals and how they relate to what is happening to them. And that as soon as you get beyond the biological factors, then you need that broader frame of reference to understand what's happening in the process. And the third area was on the use of imagery in healing, of which there's more in medicine, although it's not widespread. Biofeedback involves the use of the imagination, hypnosis. Some of the relaxation techniques involve the use of imagery of one kind or another. The factor in faith, I think, within the use of imagery is what the content of the imagery is and the context in which it's done. And out of that came the other book that I wrote on the basis of this leave, and that's The Healing Presence, in which I use the content of the gospel as the material of imagery that I think is very useful for wellness, for healing, for recovery. And maybe we'll get to all that and maybe we won't. I want to start with the placebo effect. Physicians are faith healers. If you have a good relationship with your physician, tell him or her that sometime. And then notice the response to it. The response is likely to be negative because very few physicians perceive themselves as faith healers. But if you take the placebo effect seriously, then faith healing is an appropriate way to think of what is done. Not all that's done, but a part of what's done. Placebo is expectant trust that a healing remedy will be effective. The white lab coat, the stethoscope, the surroundings of the clinic with all of the symbols of what can be done through modern medical science, all of that evokes trust on the part of people that what is done is going to be helpful, is going to be effective.
Tom, can yes. I say a word here? There were some welfare mothers who were coming to the clinic, and the doctor who served this particular one dressed casually, you know, a sweater and t-shirt. Sneakers and so on. And one of the women said, I don't even feel like coming here. When I go to a doctor, I want to see one who looks like a doctor, not a man in the street. So he felt that he was coming and being one of them. And she wanted him to be something very special.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. That happens all the time. One of the most interesting parts of the story the establishing of holistic health centers, which was what Granger's Westberg's first attempt was. He put clinics in in churches, which weren't fully used during the week. His idea was to do a whole person kind of care, a pastoral counselor, a physician, and a nurse to provide treatment. Well, in their initial attempts, they didn't have any of the paraphernalia of medicine around. The physician simply wore street clothes, got the same kind of reaction. So what they had to do is to make the clinic in the church look like a medical clinic, and still maintain some of the symbols of the church that were there as well. But it's the same point.
I wonder if that doctor that went like that, if he allowed the patients to use his first name.
Well, that may work against it.
I go to a doctor I think very highly of, but I'm old enough to be his grandmother.
Yes.
And I'm Ruth, but to me, I don't call him much of anything if I can help it. But otherwise, I would have to call him doctor.
That's right.
And it doesn't seem exactly like that.
Yeah, I that's a good point. But for many people, to be able to say doctor is part of this trust that this person is going to be able to make me well. And I need that role clearly defined. So it's not just George or Harry or Tom.
That would make any difference to me.
Well,
I saw a statistic and it named them. Certain amount of doctors that wanted this or wanted that. Only 1% wanted their patients to call them by their first name.
Yes, right.
I have to be one of them.
Right.
But I don't use it.
Yeah, I would guess that you're in a minority.
Definitely, I usually am.
I just would like to say I'm really impressed. I've recently I'm usually called Miss Crone. I don't know why, but anybody, my doctor's office where they call people by their first name, they call me Miss Crone. At the end of the day, I don't know why. But anyway, it was a great relief to my distress to find everybody calling themselves by their first name. To me that's so very personal. She's my sister. She wants everybody to be called grandfather, their grandfather, or her aunt, or whatever they are. And maybe I think it's so individual. That's how I feel. But I just want to express that I felt in my forced change of address that I found this personal belief and trust.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to say this, we're not going to monopolize the conversation, but when she refers to our deceased aunts and uncles and so forth, she uses Aunt Lizzie and so forth, and when we only had one grandmother, and she refers to her as a grandma.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, that's enough.
Yeah. Well, titles are significant in terms of what how the relationship is defined and what the expectations are within that relationship. And that's certainly true in the relationship of a person with his or her healer, however that healer is defined, because I would extrapolate and say that what I'm talking about here with a physician is true whoever the healer is. The role is very important. Myths surrounding the use of placebos, that it's all in a person's head. Only neurotic and suggestible people respond to placebos. The placebo effect is a nuisance at best and deceit at worst. The placebo effect only happens when patients mistakenly think they are receiving medical treatment. Those are all myths. The truth is that the placebo effect is at work all the time in everybody. It is a factor that is involved in the healing process, with some more than others. But it's a factor that needs to be considered as part of the healing that goes on. The best evidence for that we have is the use of placebos in controlled clinical trials. Now, the reason for doing clinical trials is to establish the efficacy of some new drug or treatment. And the only way you can do that objectively is to measure it against a placebo. A placebo simply means some inert substance that has no therapeutic agency or power in it. And so the idea is you measure this new therapeutic agent against the placebo, and then you find out how efficacious the new agent is. And the assumption always is that the placebo doesn't do anything. But the real truth is the placebo does a lot. According to studies broadly stated, 33% of people on the average will respond in a positive way as far as healing is concerned with the placebo. And in some cases, it approaches 100% in clinical trials. And this is simply to indicate what is going on. The original purpose of the test is the experimental treatment versus the placebo, which is regarded as nothing. And then you observe the change in the physical condition. The actual test is the experimental treatment plus faith versus the placebo, which is faith alone. Now that's the point that I want to make. What you're measuring is the new treatment against faith, the new treatment plus faith against faith alone, because the placebo identifies the expectant trust factor that is going on in the healing process. The only true test would be, and of course you can't do it, is the experimental treatment without the patient's knowledge, and that's unethical, versus the experimental treatment plus faith versus the placebo faith alone. Then you could get a true test, really, of all the factors that are involved in this. So that's the best evidence, I think, that we have, that faith is a factor in the healing that occurs within the medical world. And stated in the way that I have stated it, I don't know of any physician who would argue with that, though they may not normally perceive it that way. They would say, yeah, that's right. That is what's going on. Sir William Osler, many years ago, said, and I remember this exactly right, he said, use a new medication quickly before it loses its healing power, because the new agent is always perceived with great hope and expectation, and after a time it may lose some of that value, not only in the mind of the person who is receiving the treatment, but the physician, because you see, the expectations of the physician is part of the faith factor. And that's very clear from, well, one story in particular that indicated that is that a physician was participating in a clinical trial, and this one person that was being treated was receiving a treatment that the physician regarded as a placebo, and then he asked for the what the therapeutic agent was so he could administer it, and it turns out that once he realized the difference between the placebo and the therapeutic agent, that the healing power was diminished in what was happening. One of the the most dramatic stories I know that shows you what the power of a placebo is an oft-related tale of a researcher, a cancer researcher, who was involved with the testing of the drug crebiacin. And it was a new treatment for cancer. Was doing this in the context of a hospital where one of the patients was in the late stages of cancer, cancer the size of oranges inside this person was not included in the test because everything that had been done that was possible to be done had been done, and it was believed that he was beyond the stage of any kind of cure, and to include him would have messed up the results of this particular study. Well, this man persuaded the researcher to include him in the study, and the effects on him in particular were very dramatic. The cancer diminished rapidly and radically. His lungs, which were affected, cleared up. He was left the hospital, took up flying, which was his avocation. And then there came a report in the newspapers that there were some questions about the medical validity of crebiacin as a cancer a drug. And within weeks, the man was back in the hospital, and his condition became as bad as it had been before. By this point, the researcher had solid evidence that crebiacin, in fact, was not an effective agent for the cure of cancer. And so he did what I think was unethical, but he did it anyway. He told the patient, we've got a new and improved kind of crebiacin that has proved very effective, and what he gave him was just a solution of water. And again, the response to that was dramatic in the way that it had been before. So that, again, he was released from the hospital and took up his avocation of flying until he saw in the newspaper a statement that the AMA had declared that crebiacin was not an effective treatment for cancer. Within 2 months, he was back in the hospital and died shortly after that. Now, that's a very dramatic story of what can happen on the basis of what we can only regard as a placebo effect. And there aren't very many stories like that. It's the only story like that that I know about. But it illustrates, I think, just how dramatic this effect can be. I'll relate just one other example of this to give it more flesh and blood kind of understanding. And that there are two Japanese researchers who were physicians and did this experiment on 13 young people who were known to be susceptible to what we would call poison ivy. And they were dressed up in all of the paraphernalia that is associated with the medical profession that enhances the authority of that. And they did this experiment. These lads were blindfolded, and then they were told that over their hands and arms were being brushed poison ivy leaves. And they were, in fact, just leaves off of a bush and were not poison ivy at all. Of those 13, 12 developed the itching, I'm not even sure now what you call it, the evidence on the arm of the poison ivy, along with the itching and all the symptoms that were there appeared. And then they reversed it in the experiment with the same group and said this time that the leaves were not poison ivy when in fact they were. And then only two of the group developed any evidence of the poison ivy. It's again simply an illustration of what this faith factor is, of what you expect to happen, and how much that influences what in fact goes on in terms of the healing that occurs. These are the necessary conditions for the placebo effect: the patient's faith in medical treatment, the physician's faith in medical treatment, that the physician in fact believes that the remedy and the treatment that is being given is effective and powerful, and then the patient and the physician's faith in each other. If you have those three conditions present, then the placebo effect will be very powerful. Now you can substitute for that a Christian Science practitioner, a faith healer in the Christian tradition, or any other person who is perceived as a healer. And within that relationship, the placebo effect will be a powerful factor in the healing that takes place. Any questions about that or comments? I want to make some applications of that to the church and the church's ministry, but let me just pause. Any comments just about placebo?
Maybe the food and drug testers probably ought not be so happy or fast with their news releases on what they're doing.
Say a little bit more about
that. Well, right now, 50% of the men in the country likely to have prostate trouble, some person will. This new drug called Proscar is, for a year and a half, it's been a testing, people were looking forward to it. And now they say they're not real sure about after effects. They think it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of confidence in it, but now suddenly this brings a sort of a shadow across it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I think all of that kind of thing makes a difference. Let me raise the question in terms of the Christian tradition more specifically. We say Jesus saves, he forgives sins, he inaugurates the reign of God, he promises he promises the fulfillment of all things. Does he heal? I want to bring us back to where we started and just raise that question anew. And the reason that I do is because I think the expectant trust that people have is with medical care, and appropriately so for many conditions. And that the expectant trust in any resource for healing that comes out of the church is very, very low. Examine the prayers for healing that you hear in the church regularly. What they ask for is for the wisdom and the knowledge and strength to those who care for the person. And they often ask for that the person has strength to endure whatever is taking place. Not so often do you have included the expectant trust of some healing that will come outside of those kind of interventions. What does it mean today to talk about expectant trust for healing to come from God through Christ? I just raise it as an open question with the little time that we have left. What do you think? Yes?
I suppose the direction we're moving now is to talk about wholeness. You say wholeness includes physical as well as all these other things you have up there. But I don't think we're quite ready to say, therefore. We're not sure how far it will go. Maybe we're sort of at a halfway point.
Take that just a step further. Therefore, what?
Therefore, healing should take place, ought to take place, but only may take place. I think that's where we are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes?
In our psychology practice, or therapy practice, we deal a lot with depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say, and it's part of my doctoral research that I do in the language, the inbreaking grace of God through Christ is a healing power. In depression, we are finding not yet significant statistics, but a real feeling now among researchers that recognizing the immanent God as opposed to the transcendent God
mm-hmm.
is the way of is healing. And it's not a placebo effect, and it's different from the medical model where we're talking about the physical illness, and does the recognition that God dwells within me and makes me, does that recognition make me well physically? I'm guessing in the medical world we'll find that it does. In the treatment of depression, I can say someday for sure publicly that it will.
Mm-hmm.
It is recognizing the immanent God is the way in which I understand Jesus healing.
Yeah, good. I like bringing in the distinction between a transcendent intervention and then talking about the immanent power of God at work in our natures and in ourselves. And a lot of the faith healing tradition within Christianity sees it solely in terms of a transcendent external act that will disrupt the forces of nature and recreate the human being. And to see the difference between that and an expectant trust that the healing power of God is in many ways a natural power available within the order of nature rather than a supernatural intervention. I don't think you have to opt for either or on that. But I appreciate the distinction. Dean?
Isn't our hesitation to expect healing in the church and to formulate prayers that have room for it, isn't that a product of a society that has sort of encapsulated itself in the rational, scientific
yes.
mode of thinking, wherein truth is, public truth at least, is only thought of as that which is proven according to the methods of science.
Yeah.
And maybe there is a room to say there are other kinds of truth, but you don't really, the society isn't ready to call it public truth yet. You can have those private ideas if you want to, but maybe that's where the crux of the matter is.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think that's right on. And you can have the private truth, but there's a suspicion that hangs over it in terms of its validity. And we are all, I think, much more conditioned by the scientific worldview than we would like to admit. And coming from a culture like Africa, where there is such an openness to the world of the spirit, is a dramatic difference. And so we have to work, I think, at paying attention to the spiritual dimension. Even though we may be very good, quote, Christians, it's not natural for us to pay attention to this and the difference that it makes.
maybe even God accommodates to situations. It sounds awful, maybe, but maybe some of these things are more likely to happen in an environment in which the openness is there.
Oh, I think that's right. They are more likely to happen because whatever kind of power you're talking about, unless you're connected to it, it's not going to make a difference. And that's the value of a concept like expect and trust. Because the resource may be there, but if you're not linked into it, it's not going to be much helpful. It's not going to be very helpful to you. Yes?
You know, somehow this in a way it makes me uneasy because people will have a tendency to say, well, if you had more faith, you'd be healed. And are you familiar with Mary Peterman's book?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and she talked a lot about that. She said, I was too sick to have faith, you know, but her friends prayed for her and she was healed for a period of time of cancer, 10 years later, and she had another bout. I think she ultimately succumbed. But her big contention was, you know, the healing isn't always based on that person's faith. She said,
oh, yeah.
So, you know, if you're not healed, then are people saying, oh, you don't have enough faith, that's why? You know?
Yeah.
Or do we just have to say, hey, there's a certain amount of biology here that, you know, if healing is not going to take.
Yeah, I appreciate your saying that because that's one of the big bugaboos, I think, with people like Bernie Siegel and others, that this is turned into a kind of magic formula, almost, for reversing illness.